Oh boy. Oh boy. This episode of A Slice of Ham is brought to you by my lovely Patreon supporters, including and limited to Jordan Godwin. Jordan Godwin? Seth Maloney? No. I always start with my girlfriend's name. So sorry. Jordan Maloney, Seth Godwin, August Reed, Marty Abernathy, Christy Knapp, Leslie Gettinger, Mindy Carrier, Allie McDowell, Shalane Lane, Kimberly Newell, Crystal Lurvy, Jordan Ackley, Aislinn Wilkerson, Dan Murphy, Callie Maiden, Brooke Ponstein, Megan Weimer, Elizabeth, Amanda Haynes, Emily Davis, Andrea Livingston, Samantha Ward, Monica Hempfling, Christine Field, Mary, or MJ for short, Shay Bank, Alan Caldwell, Matthew McHam, Corinne Werner, and Spencer Johnson. Thank you very much for sticking by me. Thank you very much for being so patient. So patient with me. You guys are wonderful. You guys are amazing. You guys are so supportive. And I know that I say this every time, yada, yada, yada. It's belaboring the point, but you guys are the best. So I just want to tell you that. I got a quick little update for you. I've got a wonderful story to tell you guys today. You're going to be so excited. I just can't wait to get into it. So let's get into today's slice of ham. Whoa. All right, just gonna jump right into it. Welcome to another episode of A Slice of Ham. I know that I've been very sporadic with my uploading. I've been taking a lot of fucking breaks, and I don't like it, but I also do like it. Hi, hello, welcome. My name is Casey Hamilton. Welcome to another episode of my podcast, A Slice of Ham. If you're new here, welcome. I'm gonna kiss you. Thank you. Thank you for showing up. If you're not new here, I'm going to kiss you anyway. Thank you for showing up. Oh my God. Well, so a lot has happened since I have posted the last episode. I was on the right track, ready to get back into the habit, and then something happened, which is going to be the basis of this episode, what I'm going to talk about. Something fucking remarkable happened to us, and some of you, a lot of you already know this, but if you don't, I really want to break down the nitty-gritty of what we did. But first, how are you? I hope you're doing well. I hope you're doing okay. I hope you're not still shaken up over the Will Smith Chris Rock debacle. I hate to sound like another white man with an opinion, but nobody looked good in that situation. Chris Rock, that was a bit of a tasteless joke. It was a tasteless joke. He may not have known that she had alopecia, but even if he did, you know, not a cool joke to make. It's not cool to punch down like that. But, you know, at the same time, you guys are celebrities and he's a comedian who was paid to present and to rib a little. G.I. Jane, can't wait to see it. That was a rib. That wasn't a punch down or a jab. That was a little light ribbing. That was playful roast banter that we've heard at every fucking award show. Ricky Gervais, I mean, he has said far worse things to a lot of people, but I think he gets away with it because he's British, and we assume that those people are more sophisticated. From what I saw, you know, Jada Smith, if you live under a fucking rock, Chris Rock made a G.I. Jane joke at the Oscars towards Jada Pinkett Smith, who has alopecia, who I did not know had alopecia until the night of the Oscars. And then Will Smith walked up on stage and slapped him in the face and then yelled twice, keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth. While he's presenting for Best Documentary Feature, while he makes a little joke. And I'm gonna really, you know, I don't want to be like, you know, it was a joke, whatever, because yeah, okay, it's alopecia is a serious medical condition and it causes a lot of self-consciousness. And what I assume, again, I can't speak from experience. What I assume is a lot of second guessing yourself, you know? And that's hard, especially for a woman. Especially for a woman. And especially for a woman who's in the public eye 24/7, you know? But to slap someone in the face, not cool. And then it was really, man. All my life, I've been a big fan of the Oscars. I've been a big fan of the movies. I have a reverence for the craft. And I really do think that even though, you know, it's a circle jerk awards circuit thing, but there is some merit to the Oscars, to these award shows, to these prestigious film awards. I pay attention to who wins at the Cannes Film Festival. I pay attention to who wins at the Venice International Film Festival. South by Southwest is very, very important in terms of distribution. The Golden Globes, the Emmys, the BAFTAs. I pay attention to a lot because I'm a lover of the craft and I have a respect for the industry. Because it's our form of escapism. And for Americans, that's our number one export, is entertainment. I was disappointed, is the best way you can describe it. And I don't want to, you know, I saw people comment on the TikTok I made a TikTok. I was like, what just happened? And some people were commenting that Chris Rock deserved it. I don't agree with that. I don't agree that Chris Rock deserved to be slapped and yelled at on live television in front of an audience. I think that he hey, have a conversation with him. Absolutely. Hey, that's not cool. My wife has alopecia. Can you not do that? And I'm sure Chris Rock would have gone, oh, cool. But I think because of the Oscars jokes in 2016, you know, there might have been a little bit of prickliness there, but it still shouldn't have mattered with such a throwaway joke, you know, and it could have been over in a second. It could have been over in a second. Jada rolled her eyes and then moved on, and Will could have moved on, and then everybody would have forgotten about it. But now Will Smith has ensured that, number one, people will call his wife G.I. Jane until the day she fucking dies, and that's a disservice. And he also, and this is what makes me the most sad. This is what makes me really, really sad. His Best Actor win, a win that he has been working up to for 21 years. 22 years, probably, if you really want to count. Ali came out in 2011. 2001, motherfucker. He's been in the Oscar contention category. He's been an Oscars contender for 20 years, over 20 years. And the year that he is certain to win, there are some years where you look at the nominees and it's no contest. And sometimes it's no contest in terms of their acting ability. The best example of that would be J.K. Simmons in Whiplash. Oh, he was going to win. Daniel Kaluuya in the Black Panther, Judas and the Black Messiah. No contest. Was absolutely going to win based on pure talent alone. And there are some other wins that are like, it's their year. You got to give it to him. Leonardo DiCaprio. A wonderful,
wonderful performance, and he did deserve it, but there also was a little sprinkling of, you haven't gotten an Oscar, and you've been trying to get an Oscar, so here's an Oscar, you know? This was Will Smith's year to win. And now, every time someone talks about him winning Best Actor, they're going to bring up the smack. I can't tell you how many memes I've seen, how many videos I've seen on Reddit, on Twitter, on TikTok. Just headlines that say Best Smactor makes me feel so bad for Will. I really feel awful for him. I can't imagine what he must be feeling right now. It must feel like everything is kind of spiraling down away from him. Almost every headline has been like, Will Smith wins Best Actor moments after slapping Chris. It's not isolated. It's forever associated with that moment. And it also begs the question, you know, what ripple effect is this going to have? You know, I worry. I'm definitely the type of person that I may not, to a degree, you know, you shouldn't tolerate intolerance. If people are being racist, bigoted, homophobic, if they're being really nasty, then you shouldn't tolerate it. But I am of the ilk that I may not agree with what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. And if you want to make jokes about me, go for it. The joke was definitely a tad bit in poor taste, for sure. And I think now, you know, knowing that Jada Pinkett Smith, has alopecia, you know, I wouldn't make the joke after knowing that. I would stay away from it. But if I didn't know that she had alopecia and I thought she just shaved her head just because she wanted to, I would probably make the joke. I think another part of the like discourse that's kind of getting skewed is, you know, people keep bringing up the 2016 Oscars where Chris Rock joked about Jada Pinkett Smith and about how she didn't get invited to the Oscars. And Jada getting invited to the Oscars is like me getting invited to Rihanna's panties. It didn't happen. I'm not invited. And people bring that up as if to say that there's like this awful blood, and there might be bad blood between them, but I don't think that the slap was revenge for the joke in 2016 and for that joke there. Or maybe it was. I don't know. This is kind of the problem with weird pop culture moments like this, you can only talk based on speculation. It was a stupid, tasteless joke. And it was a massive overreaction on Smith's part. And I think if you really want to look to like how people should have reacted, look to Jada. Look to Jada Pinkett Smith, who just rolled her eyes. She rolled her eyes and was like, that wasn't funny. And then was going to probably move the fuck on. I don't think she looked at Will and was like, you better do something. No, I think she was just like, all right, whatever. Ha ha, funny. If someone was speaking from experience, if someone was making a joke about me that I didn't think was very funny, but other people laughed at, I'd be like, whatever, okay. And then move on. I don't know. And then I think people are saying that because Will was also laughing at the joke beforehand. It was like, well, Will was laughing, and then he looked over at Jada and saw that how she looked me. I think that his laugh was more so a laugh of mania, like I'm about to do something, and then he got up and did it, you know. I'm still a Will Smith fan. I've been a Will Smith fan for forever. This is not going to change my mind. He's a great actor. He's very entertaining. But this is also why we shouldn't put celebrities on a pedestal like that in terms of role models. And this is also a warning to you listening right now. Don't fucking put me on a pedestal like that, because at the end of the day, I am still, I'm just a teacher from Florida, man. I'm teeny tiny. There are some people that say, like, you saved my life and you kept me from it. I cannot take credit for that. That puts way too much. That's too much credit for me. And even in Will's speech, he still went up and got the award. I didn't think they were going to escort him out. I figured that they were going to, like, talk to him, like his PR team and other people at least, but I knew he wasn't going to get escorted out. I knew they were going to let him sit there and accept that award, because rich people have a different set of rules. Famous people have a different set of rules than we do. And it is what it is. And I think everybody in the room knew it, including Will, because he knowingly went back to his seat and sat down, knowing he was going to continue with the rest of the night. It's just very disappointing. It's disappointing to see every mention of his win now associated with this boneheaded moment where he just wasn't thinking. And there are a lot of people praising him for... I've seen a lot of discourse online, people praising Will for defending his wife. And number one, I am of the opinion that that joke was so tame that she didn't need to be defended. She defended herself by rolling her eyes and moving on. I don't know. There are a lot. I think that's kind of part of the problem with social media and the internet and having the ability to recall moments instantly. You know, people bring up the 2016 Oscars and Chris Rock's joke about Jada, and there must be a bigger conspiracy. He must hate Jada and want to make her feel bad, and he must have known about it, and there must be this incredible conspiracy of bad blood, when the most logical and likely answer is the most simple answer. And that simple answer is Chris Rock made an offhanded little ribbing joke and Will Smith wildly overreacted in front of an audience of millions of people. It was entertaining, to say the least, I guess. But, and then him giving that speech, that rambling speech. It was very hard to watch. It was very, very hard to watch. I think in the end, nobody came out okay. Nobody looked good in that situation. But some of the discourse, I've seen some people call Chris Rock like anti-black and anti-woman, and I think that's a little bit like you're reading into it too much, y'all. You're reading into it too much. It was the joke, G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it. It literally lasted 3 seconds. It was an offhanded joke, and then he forgot about it. And if not for Will's reaction, everybody else would have forgotten about it, except for maybe a handful of people that probably would have been like, she has alopecia, that's not okay, and would have commented on it online. But now, everybody's talking about it, and people on the internet want to be correct. Everybody wants to be right about, you know, something. Everybody wants to feel right about something and have a community where people validate you. Did Chris Rock deserve it? No. He deserved a talking to. He deserved a conversation. Like, hey, let me pull you aside and talk to you about why that's not okay. He deserved a discussion. Not a slap on... It was just... You know, and if it happened behind closed doors, it would still be bad, but it wouldn't be as bad. It was the very, very public nature of it that made it very evident that Will Smith, in that moment, Willard Smith, did not, either he did not care or did not have any realization of the boundaries of the room he was in. And my girlfriend, Jordan, initially said, like, well, you're trying to, I guarantee, like, trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, well, you don't know how unstable he might be. He might have, like, because I have issues with my anger, and I sometimes, I lash out sometimes, and it's almost unconscious the way it happens. Very, very quick. Like, I'll hit myself, or I'll scream in frustration, and it'll almost be like my brain is on autopilot. But I was like, no, this is different. He had a long, long time from his seat to that stage. It was a long walk. He had a long time to think about it, a long time to turn around and go, eh, you know what, maybe not. It was definitely a joke in poor taste. But the reaction was probably the worst thing he could have done, because it's an example of the Streisand effect. Now everybody's fucking talking about it, and everybody's got your wife's name in their mouth. Barbara Streisand bought a house, in the mid 2000s. I think she bought a house, and people were trying to get pictures of it to post online, and she went ham trying to get those pictures taken down. And so people started getting real interested. Well, why is she trying to get the pictures taken down? There must be something to these pictures. Let's see them. And then more and more and more and more pictures started. And now, you know, it exploded. And it was the exact opposite of what she wanted to happen. And it's literally called the Streisand effect now. Initially, when I was first starting my TikTok journey, I made that video, Hey There Delilah, the very first video I ever made that kind of really popped off and hit over a million after the Patrick Star video, Classy Bougie Patrick. Hey there, Delilah, what's it like there in Rack City? You got teens and teens and 20s raining down upon them titties, yes you do. I remember posting that, and then it went viral, and I panicked because I was a teacher at the time, and I was like, oh shit, am I going to get fired? I said titties, I said booty, oh no, I'm going to get fired. And then I privated the video, and everybody kept asking me, where is it, where is it, where is it? I kept getting DMs and DMs. And then I saw a couple of people commented, like, I have the video, I'll repost it. And then I was like, well, fuck, just, and then I put it on public again because I didn't want to create the Streisand effect, and then I just, you know, doubled down. So... Nah, I mean, it's every mention of Will Smith and the slap, the slap, the slap, the slap, the slap. You type in the words King Richard and it comes up with the slap, which, like, kind of tarnishes all the work that the people who worked on that film did. And it's amazing how it could all just be dismantled in a moment. This is a pop culture moment that will be talked about for until we are dead. After we are all dead, this will be talked about in some way, shape, or form. It's one of those moments, you know? It might not be talked about in civil discourse all the time. It might not be talked about academically for a long time, but I guarantee you, forever, people be like, hey, remember when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock? He has forever... He's put his best actor win in a box. Whereas normally an Oscar win should really open you up to more opportunities and more praise. He's put his win in a box. His best actor win is now a fun fact. Fun fact, Will Smith slapped Chris Rock and then won best actor 40 minutes later. 40 minutes before winning this award, Will Smith went on stage and slapped comedian Chris Rock as he was presenting Best Documentary Feature for making a joke, for making a G.I. Jane joke about, and they all mentioned the joke. They all mentioned the joke. A G.I. Jane joke, a G.I. Jane joke, a G.I. Jane joke. People on the internet are acting like Jada Pinkett Smith is a stage 4 cancer patient as well. And it's also a good example of how the internet and participatory culture at large tends to, what's the best way to put it? I mean, like turbocharge issues. Because a throwaway joke got turned into like a racist and a feminist issue in the matter of a few hours. Chris Rock was being ableist, which I don't think he was. I doubt that he even knew that she had alopecia. But even if she did, I mean, I've seen a lot of comments that people are like, that wasn't cool, I don't like that, that wasn't right, that's an insult. But then I've seen other people that are like, I am bald, I have alopecia, I have cancer, I've been called G.I. Jane and loved it. So I don't know really what to make of it. What I do know is that slapping somebody for making a joke is almost always not okay. In this specific instance, it was not, in my opinion. It just seems like Will Smith is going through something. And I don't know what it is, but that was a very strange... And he went through a very wide range of emotions very, very quickly. He was laughing, then he was angry, then he was yelling, then he was laughing again when Amy Schumer was making the joke about it, and then he was crying on stage, and then he was laughing again, then he was dancing. It was... I mean, Will Smith is a hero of mine. He is one of the most charismatic and bankable stars in Hollywood history. And to do that as a black man is also very, very inspiring. To achieve the success that he has and the influence that he has is very inspiring to do as a black man around the time that he did it. He really is one of the biggest Hollywood success stories. And he damn near tore it all down in a moment. Because now, whenever anybody says the name Will Smith, there is a good chance they're going to make a fucking slap joke. And that invalidates all of the hard, hard work that he did. And the fault does not lie on Chris Rock for making the joke. The fault lies on Will Smith for how he reacted to that admittedly very tame joke. Let's not mince words here. Jesus. It's just very sad.
It's a very sad situation.
So let's not talk about that anymore. And let's talk about something fun.
All right. So I would love to tell you about this trip that we took in the beginning of March. We took a trip in the beginning of March. March 5th, we actually left. We took about a week-long trip. Me and Jordan, my girlfriend Jordan, hi. We took a trip up to Utah. Drove from San Antonio to a town called Kanab, Utah. K-A-N-A-B. Kanab. And when I tell you that this was, one of the, I would say, top two trips I've ever taken in my life. Probably number one, honestly. I would say it's number one. This is the best trip I've ever taken in my life. and it came from a very unlikely place. You wouldn't think that this place would really be the best trip of my life, but it speaks to the majesty and the power of this place. My girlfriend and I like to, you know, with an account that has 6.5 million followers, that's a lot. And I'm so grateful for it. But, you know, some of those followers are just people that know me as that guy from TikTok. And some of the people are people like you who are true believers that have been with me since the beginning, who encouraged me to leave my job and who I will never forget. So I always want to remember the roots and where I came from and, you know, people like Leslie and Jen and Vicky and there's, and Jason and Joe, and there's a lot of people that I could talk about. You know, oh no, I don't want to get emotional. What was I talking about before? There's a lot of people like you guys, true believers, the OGs, I call them, who have been with me since the very beginning.
And with an account with 6.5 million followers, you know, you never know what kind of companies or brands or whatever are going to respond to you. So we just sometimes we follow people and we send messages and, you know, we see what happens. Like we'll send messages on Instagram, just like, whatever. See if they respond. And we sent a message to Best Friends because I've been working at the Animal Defense League, working, quote unquote. Working is, I don't volunteer. I'm going to volunteer there. I haven't done the onboarding classes yet, but I go there all the time to pet the cats and to pet the dogs and to I call it animal enrichment is what it's called. Animal enrichment, because those animals need attention and they need love. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. And if you go to an animal shelter and they make you feel bad for not adopting the animals, but spending time with them, tell them, fuck you. I'm providing animal enrichment because these animals need to get used to people. They need to get used to human interaction. They need to get used to being around people because the goal is to get them adopted and put them in a forever home. I've really, really, really taken a shine to animal welfare this year in a way that I've never felt this passionate about a thing, you know? I've been passionate about myself. I've been passionate about me and my dreams and, you know, making dumb videos. And, you know, my initial biggest passion was creating scholarships for young filmmakers. But I can't really do that all the time because I don't have a steady. If I could find a couple businesses that would be willing to give me like a lump sum that I could give as a scholarship, I would fucking love it. Some sort of a fund that a business could help me out with, like sponsored by me, we're doing this giveaway. I would love to do that, but I don't know the logistics of how to make that work. So I started going to the Animal Defense League in San Antonio, Texas. It's a wonderful no-kill shelter, and I love that it's a no-kill shelter. It's fucking beautiful. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful place. I love it. I love the cat rooms. I'm there all the time. They know me by name. I go there a lot. And so my girlfriend was like, well, if you love going to the shelter all the time, why don't you check out Best Friends? And Best Friends Animal Society, they have sanctuaries and shelters all over the place. But it all started with this enormous animal sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. A bunch of people back in the 80s decided they were going to start an animal sanctuary, and they just did it. It was just like a bunch of fucking 20-somethings that got together and raised money to put a down payment on this land. $5,000 they had to raise. They literally stood in front of like grocery stores and businesses with coffee cans soliciting donations. They did it piecemeal. This is how guerrilla this campaign was. And at no point in their journey did they come upon an obstacle and go, well, what if we can't do it? It was just like, well, we have to for the animals. We got to save them. We're going to do it, and it's going to happen. So we got to figure out a way to do it. And they did it. All of the electrical work is underground because they didn't want any telephone poles or telephone wires to show. They wanted to keep it as natural as they possibly could. It is 4,000 acres. It was smaller initially, but then they did a bigger expansion. And it is, oh my God. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. And everyone who works there, I mean, literally from the founders to the CEOs, to the staff members, to the volunteers, like from the top to the bottom, everybody is on the same page. Save them all. Get these animals adopted, get them a comfortable place to live, whether it's at the sanctuary or at another person's home, save them all. And they do such fucking hard work, and the animals are so goddamn happy. Every single animal I saw was happy and content and loving their life. Cat World was so special to me. So special to me. Because I'm a big cat lover. I'm a big cat man. And they were just so, there were so many cats. There was like 400 cats. The hotel that we stayed at, the Best Friends Roadhouse and Mercantile, allows you to bring their animals from the sanctuary to your hotel room for a sleepover, either a dog or a cat or a bunny. So the first night they gave us 5 cats and they stank up that room with their shit, but we loved it. Every time they pooped, it was like a bomb. Filled the room. I made TikToks about it. They're on my page if you want to see, but it was so, so magical. And then the next night we had a sleepover with one cat. Then the next night we had a sleepover with a dog. There's Dogtown, Cat World, Horse Haven, Piggy Paradise, the Parrot Garden, the Bunny World. There's an exotic animal farm with a bunch of like owls and minks and tortoises and squirrels. And I had a pigeon bite my little fingers. and we went there. We wanted to make sure that, you know, Jordan went there when she was 13 with her grandma. And they, when you go there, you volunteer. They put you to work. You're out there. You're sweeping the parrot cages, you're scooping out the bunny shit, you're spending time with the animals, you're making toys for the parrots, you're doing it, you know? And of course, we got a little bit of the VIP treatment. We got a VIP tour, and we, you know, it was very nice. But they put us to work. We wanted the real volunteer experience. Partially because I you know, as an influencer, I always want to make sure that I stay as human as I possibly can and remember my roots and just be a person at my core, because it's easier when you're authentic. And I loved every bit of it. I loved every bit of my experience. It was beautiful. The pigs, so smart. We did a pig walk, and they're very food motivated. We were just dropping little sunflower seeds and dates and fig Newtons, and they would walk like with no leash or nothing. It was just cool leading a pack of pigs. Dogtown is a very, very special place at the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary. Very famous place, actually. There is a National Geographic show. I think there was a National Geographic show called Dogtown that ran for about 4 seasons. We got the season 1 collection on DVD while we were at the Mercantile. And the work that they do for these animals is unparalleled. I mean, this place, I've heard a lot of people call it the Disneyland of animal shelters, and it's not. It's the Mecca of animal shelters, because you got to go there before you die. You have to make a pilgrimage. You need to fucking go there. If you have the means to, if you have the ability, I mean, if you're saving up money to take a trip to Disneyland, if you're an animal lover, if you're really saving up money to take a trip somewhere, I would very, 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 very highly recommend taking a trip to Kanab, going to the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, taking some volunteer days, staying at their roadhouse, doing some animal sleepovers. It will change your life. Because now I am 100% invested in animal welfare. I want to save them all. I want to do whatever I can. I want to use my platform however I can to help these animals. Because, I mean, everyone at Best Friends was the real deal. We met some of the founders. We met a couple of the founders over some meals, and they were the most down-to-earth, amazing people that I've ever, ever, ever encountered. Inspiring. Very inspiring. And you can see their tenacity in the way they carry themselves, in the way they talk. You can see the story behind their eyes. They built that place from the ground up. And in the early days, you know, we're really roughing it. One of the founders that we talked to, her name was Faith. Faith lived in a double-wide trailer for like 2 years with no water. She had to haul her water and the water for the fucking animals, for the 10 to 14 dogs that she lived with in that double wide trailer. And I saw some comments of people that were like, oh, watch out for the CEOs and the founders. There's mansions in those hills. Faith still lives in that double wide trailer. These people are the real deal. I met the CEO. I met the founders. I met a lot of the higher up staff members. And these people were out there in the shit with me, helping scoop out the bunny places, feeding the pigs with me, getting down and dirty with the animals, showing them love, proving basically that, you know, the animals knew them and loved them, and they put the fucking work in. Because, I mean, they wouldn't be there if they didn't fall in love with the place. I really was considering moving there, and we still are. We still are. But the logistics of it are very, very hairy. But it was just so perfect. Every bit of it was electrifying. It really was. It ignited a love of animal welfare in me that I never knew I had. And I think that that is one of the most beautiful things that a trip can do. We drove there. It was an 18-hour drive, and we love a good long road trip, but it was a little bit grueling, for sure. We stopped off in Santa Fe the first day. It was about 2 hours out of the way because I had to stop at the House of Perpetual Return, the House of Eternal Return, at Meow Wolf, and look who's here. Hi.
That was my girlfriend herself.
So, speaking of my girlfriend, Jordan, she had... she had altitude sickness almost the entire time. It was rough. The drive was rough. The trip was rough. The drive back home was rough. It was very rough on her. And I tried to help however I could, but unfortunately in situations like that, when it's like a sickness, I can't really help much. So I feel kind of useless, but you know, I did what I could. So we had volunteer shifts together. Like, we did a thing at Cat World, we worked at the Bunny World, we did at Parrot Garden. Was so fucking loud because the cockatiels, they scream and they compete to see who's the loudest, and I'm not even kidding, they probably have to get over 110 decibels. It was like jackhammer level. It was so loud that I was impressed. With how loud they were being. But anyway, Jordan had altitude sickness almost the entire time. And there was a day, I think it was like the third day of the trip, because we were there for 5 days. Best Friends put us up in the hotel, by the way. That was very nice of them to do. They put us up in the hotel. It was wonderful because we would not have been able to go if they didn't do that. Because we don't have the money to be throwing on trips like that. But They were like, yeah, we'll let you stay at the hotel. And they graciously moved a lot around to make sure we got volunteer spots, because the volunteer spots get pretty booked up pretty quickly. And we were very lucky to experience what we experienced. But there was one day where we both had shifts at Dogtown, and it was our first day through the whole... It was our only day the entire trip at Dogtown. And she felt really, really sick, and she was like, I think I'm going to stay back. And I felt awful because I didn't want her to miss out on Dogtown. But she had been here before. She was like, I came when I was 13. I'm okay with staying. It sucks, but it's whatever. You've never been here at all. I'd never been to Utah before. I'd never seen the Red Rocks. Nothing. So I was like, well, I'm going to go to Dogtown. I'm sorry, but I got to go. And she was like, yeah, you should go. I want you to. And then I went. And start my shift at Dogtown, and, you know, they basically do whatever you do whatever they need you to do. So we started with walking some dogs. I took a dog on a trail, and took a dog named Eduardo on a trail, and took him around a little walk, and took him on the trail. And by the end of the trail, I was super hot, and, you know, it was super cold, and I was wearing layers, and then it was hot and muggy. But it was hot because I was walking for so long, but the dog loved it. And then we loaded up the dog in the car, and I took Eduardo on a drive. We went back and got another dog, and they were like, do you want to take another dog for a car ride? Let's take this one. And then we got Deborah. We got a dog named Deborah, and I went back to the hotel and picked Jordan up because I was like, I have a surprise for you. And there was a dog in the car, and she was very happy. So we went to McDonald's because they said that the dog could have McDonald's. And apparently the dog was on hospice care. It was in hospice foster. So they were like, you can give the dog whatever it wants. So whatever, like no processed meat, but we gave him a couple hash browns. We gave Debbie some hash browns, and Debbie loved them hash browns. So we had a lot of fun, like Cat World had a great, they had a special needs house for oh my God, they had this cat named Clark Griswold that couldn't use its back legs and would scoot around on its front legs. And he was a fast motherfucker. Clark Griswold got adopted. I got to hold so many cats. I got to hold so many precious cats that just love. There's a whole building for cats with FIV, just feline leukemia, feline immunodeficiency virus, FLV, FIV are the two. It's just such a gorgeous, gorgeous place. There's even a place called the Incontinental Suite. It's a house specifically for cats that can't control their bowels. So it smells like shit, but all of those cats are so happy to see you. One of them jumped up on my shoulders and was being so lovey, nuggling on my face and my chin and my little cheeks, but had a poopy little butthole that he just could not control. They have to be expressed throughout the day, you know. And so I was just like, please do not sit down on my shoulder, but you can stand on my shoulder. It's okay. It didn't sit down, thank God. It didn't leave a little ring for me. it was awesome. Oh, the horses were beautiful. They hang out with deer that just sort of eat. The deer stand under the horses sometimes. The pigs are great. The bunnies are great. The cats are great. The parrots are great. We saw a mink. Saw a couple owls. While I was at Dogtown during my shift, I asked the volunteer there, Katie is her name. Shout out to Katie. I talked to Katie and I said, do you have any dogs that are good? Because we wanted a dog for a sleepover. We had a dog sleepover planned that day, but we didn't have a dog to take. And we also had a free day the next day. So we had a day to explore Utah, go around the canyons, go see whatever. And we were like, well, let's just take a dog on the adventure with us. Why not do some animal enrichment and take a dog with us and give a happy dog a day? Give a dog a little happy day and me. So I ask, are there any dogs that, and this was a tall order. This is a very tall order that I, you know, it was hard to fill. Do you have any dogs that are good on sleepovers, that are good in the car, that are good on adventures, that are good around people, that like to be snuggled? This BB, me. And Katie immediately said, I have Macarena. And it was like a throwaway, well, we can try Macarena, well, why not? And then Jordan and I went in to meet Macarena when we went to go pick up the dog for the sleepover. And we went into Macarena's kennel. and Macarena could not. She went over to Jordan and kissed and hugged and shake her little tail and wiggled her little butt and went over to me and went over to Jordan and went over to me and went over to Jordan and went over to me. I'm going to start crying. She couldn't pick which one that she loved most. And then we took her back to the hotel room and she was so cute up on the bed. And it was the first night where Jordan didn't feel sick. Where she didn't feel sick. She felt normal. And I was like, oh, man, no. Oh, shit. I immediately felt scared. And then there was a moment. This was the moment, I think, that changed everything for me. I got a piece of fucking dog hair in my eye, and I had a panic attack. I had a damn near panic attack, and I started hitting myself in the head because I couldn't get it out. It was like a sensory thing. I get really bad with sensory problems, and I started hitting myself in the head, and Jordan was like, babe, just come in here and sit with the dog. And I sat down, and the dog, Macarena, just put her head on my knee. And I immediately felt calm. And I immediately stopped. And I just cried. And the dog hair came out eventually. But I just cried and sat there and hugged that dog. And she hugged me and licked me on my face. And it was at that moment that I was like, oh no, I would change a lot about my routine for this dog. And then a day later, we adopted her. I'm so happy. We even had the conversation before we left. We were like, we're not bringing home an animal. We can't. We live with my girlfriend's dad right now, so it's rent-free. We don't have to pay any bills. He's very, 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 very fucking generous. You know, we stay out of the way. We hang out with him. We keep the house clean. You know, we stay out of the way when he's working. And it's a very nice, wonderful relationship that we all have here. It's so cool. It's a big enough house. It's only the three of us in this big two-story house. But that being said, it is his house. And it would be immensely disrespectful in my mind to me and to Jordan to come back with an animal. You know, a big old shedding animal that he didn't know about. It would be very shitty of us to just be like, here, deal with this. So we didn't want to do that. So we called him and we were like, hey, we're thinking about getting a dog. I'm going to get a dog. And he was not here for it. I think because he thought we were just doing it spur of the moment. But Jordan and I really had full-on conversations about, like, what are we going to do? What's going to happen? And there was, again, it echoed the people who started the fucking sanctuary. It was a non-starter. Every time we came up with an issue, well, what if this happens? What if this becomes an issue? It was just like, well, we'll take care of it. We have to. We're bringing her home. So it just seems so natural. Yeah, we'll just deal with it. We'll take care of it. We love her. And then we knew that the moment that dog met dad, it was going to be fine. But we didn't want to be disrespectful. And so we were trying to figure out, well, maybe the dog can stay with mom for a little bit, or maybe the dog can stay with our friend. And our friend called her fucking property manager. And really, Jordan and her friends and family really got the ball. They really were moving mountains to get this girl back home. And we adopted her. We drove her home. She was perfect in the car. Didn't have an accident. Didn't pee, didn't poop, didn't puke. Loved it the whole time. She's potty trained. She's good with other dogs. She's wonderful on the leash. She was perfect. She is perfect. We renamed her Maya because we wanted to have a deserty name, but we wanted it to be short, and we also wanted to keep it in theme with Macarena, the M. Jordan wanted Leona. She wanted like Leona or Sahara, but I thought that was too many syllables, so I went with Maya. And now she's here. She's here in San Antonio. And the moment she met Dad, he fell in love and it was cool. We didn't have to worry about finding another place to stay because now she's here. I got a big crate. I got all the supplies. We went and bought all the shit we needed to. And now she has a home. And I feel in my bones that I am her daddy. That's my baby. She's at the doggy daycare place right now. There's a wonderful doggy daycare place. It's a grooming place. It's a doggy day. You can leave your dog there with a bunch of other dogs. And for $30, you can leave him there from 7 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. Goddamn. Oh, my God. It's great if you need a day to get shit done or if you just need a day to relax. And I needed to record today, and we wanted to get her in, and there we go. And she loves other dogs. She loves other dogs. She loves playing with other dogs. She gets really upset if we don't take her to the dog park because she loves to socialize and to play. She is, I don't know how we got so lucky. I don't know how we got so lucky. And it was, and to think back on the moment, like, hey, do you have a dog that fits all this criteria? Well, we got Macarena. And now we adopted her, took her home, and I fucking love her. That's my baby. That is my baby. The only snag that we've encountered is, oh boy, we have a cat. We have a little cat, and now we have a 63-pound puppy. She's a year and 4 months. She turns 2 October 14th. A fucking puppy. The first time she met the cat was between closed doors. It was like the crack of the guest room door. Niblet was in the guest room. Niblet is the cat. Maya is the dog. I am Casey. Jordan is the girlfriend. Welcome to the show. The dog caught a glimpse of the cat and lunged down and barked real aggressively, and Niblet just stood his ground and hissed at him. And I was like, good. Now, I think that has worn off, you know, and Niblet did come into our bedroom one time while Maya was in her crate, and Maya barked because she couldn't get to him. Because I think she wanted to play, and she was stuck in the crate because she was whining like she couldn't get out. Because that's the whine that she does when she can't play with other dogs. And then there was one night where she was asleep on the floor in the downstairs living room. And I was down there with her. Jordan was down there with us. She was on the couch. I was on the floor playing Mario Party on the GameCube by myself with the dog next to me. And Niblet comes downstairs and just stares. And I'm like, oh, you ballsy. We put a baby gate up at the by the foot of the stairs to make sure that they don't chase each other. And Niblet jumps over the fucking baby gate and comes down, and his necklace and his collar are jingling, and he's trying to walk all slow not to jingle his collar. And Maya wakes up and she notices the noise, but she can't see Niblet. And then Niblet goes around the hallway, Niblet goes around the staircase and comes into the living room and then just stops and stares and then walks into the kitchen because it's a very open concept. Walks into the dining room and into the kitchen and then jumps up on the kitchen counter and then starts eating treats. And then Maya catches her and then looks at him, and Maya's looking at him and he's looking at Maya. And I go over and I give Niblet some treats. And then I walk back over. I give Maya some treats. I go give Niblet some treats. And then Maya gets up and she's like, I'm going to go to the kitchen and see this guy. And then Niblet runs off the counter once Maya starts coming into the kitchen. And then they start chasing each other. And it was too quick to stop. And now Niblet has been hiding under Dad's bed. You know, that's his safe spot for thunderstorm. That's always been his safe spot since before I even came here to Texas, before I even met Jordan. He's been hiding under the bed a lot. He's very, very anxious, I think, because he doesn't want to get chased again. So we're going to curb the chasing. We're going to have to grab her, pin her down or something every time it happens. No, leave it. We want to teach her, leave it. You know, toss her, flip her up in the air like a pizza every time she does it. I think that they will get along. I think it'll be okay. I think Niblet will eventually rule the house once again. He will show Maya who's boss, as he already did. But she wants to play. She's a playful dog. And Niblet is not so playful. He likes to kind of do his own thing. So I think it's going to take a while for them to acclimate. I want to introduce them. Niblet in a crate, Maya on her leash, and just slowly acclimate them together. But other than that, it's been wonderful. It's been a little bit more, I have been a little bit more irritable, I will say. Jordan's kind of been getting the brunt of that, and that's, it's not cool, but she knows that it's, you know, it's just a little bit of prickliness, and I'm not actually being like a jerk, but there are some times when I'm just like real short or not so inclined to be so chipper, you know, not so inclined to have that bit of a string in my spring in my step or the floweriness in my voice, just because it's exhausting. Maya has been exhausting, but at the same time, so fucking rewarding, so fulfilling. I love that girl, and I love seeing her come out of her shell and just be a goofy, goofy little bone mama. So I have a lot of optimism, got a lot of hope. So the sleepover definitely was a fail, but I think it was a success. I think it really was. So really, if you guys are thinking about taking a trip somewhere, Best Friends Animal Sanctuary is the way to go. And I remember I was trying to get a Trova trip set up. I was trying to take a trip with some fans of mine somewhere. And I think I might use the connection that I made with Best Friends and the connection that I already have with Trova Trip and set up a Trova trip to Best Friends, because that would be so undeniably special to be able to share that experience with like the most diehard true fans of mine. Friends. I hate the term fans because it depersonalizes so much of this. Friends. Some fucking OG supporters of mine. The people that pushed me off the cliff and encouraged me to leave my job. I would love to share that experience with y'all. Oh, that would be great. Well, there's the story. We talked about some current events, and we talked about what's been keeping me occupied these past couple weeks. So we're hoping to get back into it. I did some reading recording. I'm going to get a lot of reading recording done tomorrow to hopefully have those posted. So everything is going to come out in one fell swoop before the end of March. Don't you worry. Oh, man. I love you very much. Listen. Say, I want you to go pet a dog or a cat today. And if you can't find one, pet a human. From all of us here at A Slice of Ham, I say us like it's not just me. From all of us here at A Slice of Ham, we thank you for listening. We praise you. I love you. Thank you. And also, Maya says hello. Thank you. Bye.